The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters. It's 10 a.m. here in London. I'm Frank Holland. Here is your 5 at 5. Wall Street's riding a six-session losing streak, and U.S. stock futures are pointing to more pressure at the open. A fresh batch of hotter-than-expected economic data fueling concerns the Fed may be forced to delay any coming rate cut. We will hear from Chairman Jay Powell about that later today. In the Middle East, investors still awaiting an Israeli response to last weekend's Iran attack. Today, we take a step back and look at some portfolio protection strategies that are crucial in these times of uncertainty. Plus, federal regulators get set to deal a major challenge to one player that is dominant in the entertainment industry. And shares of Trump Media, they continue to fall back to earth. We're going to tell you what's driving the latest stock sell-off. That's coming up right here on the show. It's Tuesday, April the 16th, 2024, and you are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. And good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. We are coming to you live from CNBC London. Thank you so much for being here with us. Let's get you ready to start this day. We begin with a check of U.S. stock futures. After another very rough session for stocks yesterday, this saw the S&P 500 and the Nasdaq close down more than 1%, and the Dow extend its losing streak to six straight sessions. Take a look this morning. You can see it's red across the board. The S&P and the Nasdaq essentially flat, but look at the Dow looking like it would open 40 points lower. All right, we're just about midway through the month. We're going to do a quick check on some of the top performers in the S&P 500. They include GE Aerospace, NRG Energy, and Newmont Mining. On the other side of things, we're talking about Globe Life, still reeling from that short seller report, down more than 50% this month. We're also looking at Lamb Weston, CarMax, and Walgreens under some heavy pressure. Right now you're seeing for the month, Walgreens Boots Alliance down just about 19%, CarMax down more than 20%. Again, Globe Life down more than 50%. But today, it's all about the big banks and what's been really a wild few sessions for the sector. Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, among those reporting before the open today. You can see those shares right now, kind of a mixed performance for them. But Bank of America down almost 0.75%. We're also checking the bond market as Treasury yields, they continue to hover at their highest levels in just about 6 months. Taking a look, the benchmark right now at 4.63, something we're going to watch. Also, the 2-year, 10-year spread has been steepening recently, something we may be talking about with some of the market guests. We're also looking at the energy sector, specifically oil holding just above 90 bucks a barrel. Taking a look this morning, WTI, that's the U.S. benchmark, down just fractionally right now, basically at 85 and a quarter. Brent crude, just a penny under 90 right now, just moved just very slightly, also fractionally lower. We also want to look at the broader commodity space, specifically gold. It is once again at an all-time high. Gold right now up fractionally. Look at that chart. You can see year to date up just about 15%. All right, that's your setup. Let's now see how Europe is shaping up as its trading day gets underway. Sylvia Amaro joins me right here in our London newsroom. Sylvia, we were just on street signs here in Europe just a bit ago. You've been tracking these declines in the European markets on Mideast tensions all morning long.
That's right. And at this stage, we do have the European Stoxx 600, the benchmark across Europe, basically on track to see their biggest daily drop since October. So the negative sentiment we're seeing in Europe this morning is pretty much a continuation of what we saw yesterday stateside and earlier this morning from Asia as well. So looking at the major bourses in Europe, you can see that they're all in the red at this stage. I would highlight, though, the FTSE 100 currently down by about almost 1.5%. And this is despite data earlier this morning showing that core wage growth slowed once again. That could be a positive for those expecting the Bank of England moving with a rate cut this summer. But clearly, that data is not bringing any sort of positive trends next to the FTSE 100 at this stage. When it comes to the sector breakdown, this is the picture. We have at the top telecoms. They're currently down by about 0.2%. One of the stocks we're tracking here is Ericsson. They reported better than expected results earlier this morning, and that is helping this sector at this stage when you see all of the others, every sector really, in the red at this stage. Basic resources, really the worst performance at this stage, down by 2.7%. Here, a lot to do with those weaker metal prices at this stage, Frank.
All right, Sylvia, thank you very much. Sylvia Amaro, right here in London with me. All right, turn our attention now over to Asia. The session there closing sharply lower after new data from China. Our JP Yong has the latest on that. JP, kind of a mixed report from China.
Absolutely, Frank. A terrible Tuesday, actually, with stocks tumbling out here in the Asia-Pacific. Now, we did hint that that stronger dollar and also rising tensions in the Middle East really weighing on stocks from Sydney to Seoul. But yes, the other story here is that China GDP print and also the March macro data coming from the world's second largest economy. Now, on one hand, first quarter GDP growing faster than expected, up 5.3% year on year. But when you look at the more recent March industrial production and retail sales data, they came in well below market expectations, hinting that there might be a slowdown, at least, in the economic pickup out in mainland China that could continue for the rest of the year and make some of their GDP growth targets a little harder to hit. You'll see here of stocks from the CSI 300 at the Hang Seng really weighed down. Tech shares among the biggest laggards also in that part of the region. And also the Hang Seng Property Index getting held down after another property developer, Times China, faced a winding up petition from Hang Seng Bank because of, again, issues regards to liquidity and also issues regards to handling their future debt problems as well. And this also complicating things for the rest of the region and raising some spillover effects, adding on to that stronger U.S. macro data, that the prospect of rates staying higher for longer, and that stronger dollar index weighing on stocks across the rest of the Asia Pacific. Now, I want to take a look at currencies just very, very quickly, because we've got a lot of major currencies in Asia that are hitting some of their weakest levels in months, actually. Six-month weakness, the weakest in 6 months, that is, for the Australian dollar and the Chinese offshore. The Korean won at their weakest levels in about 17 months, and you've got the Japanese yen also. We're watching that as it races past 154 to the dollar. And again, will they or won't they, and when might the Bank of Japan actually intervene with regards to this excessive yen weakness? Back to you, Frank.
All right, our JP Yong, live in Singapore. JP, thank you very much. We're going to turn our attention back to Wall Street, the push and pull between earnings growth and inflation putting pressure on the market. So San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly, she's just the latest official to temper rate cut expectations, saying there is no urgency to cut with current policy in a good place. At the same time, Bank of America says the 30 S&P 500 companies with earnings out so far, they've beaten expectations by 6%. Let's get more insight into the market drivers with Adele Zaman, partner at Wall Street Alliance Group. Good morning from London. I'm going to jump right into it. So far, so good when it comes to earnings season. But in your mind, how much of the market's rally year to date, how much of the potential for it to continue is weighing on earnings and earnings not only meeting expectations, but beating?
I think, Frank, the market, as far as the earnings are concerned, I think the market is overstretched at this point in time. So anything less than a spectacular earnings report is going to be punished by the market. Last time we were on the show, we called for a year-end rally, which played out. We are thinking that at this point, the market does look overstretched and is poised for a correction. You know, once every few years, we do get a correction in the market. And given the monster rally that we've had in equities since October of last year, I think a correction in the short term is definitely on the cards.
All right. I appreciate you taking a victory lap on your call for that year-end rally. Also, right now, important to note, all three of the major indices trading below their 50-day moving average. So right now, you're saying you believe the Magnificent Seven, that will continue to be magnificent despite your call for a correction. I just want to ask you about this. I'm looking at Tesla down 30% year-to-date, under pressure this morning. Apple seen a bit of a recent rally, but flat over the last month. And then Nvidia, believe it or not, some people are going to get nervous right now, but Nvidia actually down more than 2% over the last month. So the Magnificent Seven, it doesn't seem like there's seven magnificent stocks anymore. Why are you so confident these stocks are still going to power the market?
Well, you know, we think that longer term, the market, the economy is looking good, and we think that the Fed is going to be accommodative. So we feel that longer term, you know, the market's going to go higher, and the Magnificent Seven is going to be a key driver there, because they're going to be driven by artificial intelligence and cloud. And, you know, you mentioned Tesla, you know, so Tesla, is hammered. It's down more than 60% from its high in 2021. And a lot of the negative news is probably factored into the stock price already. So from this point
but Adele,
on,
can I jump in for a second? It's easy to say that AI is going to be a catalyst, but ever since we've seen rate cut expectations change pretty dramatically, these stocks have also been under pressure. So as we see the rate cut outlook get pushed further out, Mary Daly, the latest voice, you don't think that these stocks are going to remain under pressure? It seems like there is some type of correlation.
Yes, certainly. And I think that, you know, as the market factors that in, there could be some short-term correction. And what we think is that that will be an opportunity to jump in and add to these positions on the pullback.
Okay, jump in. That's a theme of your notes that you gave us. So where is the place to jump in? You said Magnificent Seven, financials, energy, that's where you would jump in if there's a pullback. I'm looking at financials. Down 2% since the bank earnings started. The IYF, the iShares ETF, tracking the financial sector down a bit more. Is this the time to jump in, or do you think you're going to see a bigger decline and you jump in later?
I think we have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. I think the market is poised for a correction over here. You know, there are some opportunities that are emerging already, but as the market falls further, there'll be more opportunities. In the financials, we do like JPMorgan Chase over here because, you know, they reported their earnings. They're disappointed on the net interest income, but their earnings overall were good. And fact of the matter is that when you do get rate cuts, the net interest income compresses, but revenues on other areas such as investment banking tend to go up, like what we saw with Goldman Sachs. So a stock like that, we would be buyers of. Yeah, we would be buyers of that. But in other areas, we would wait and see for further decline because the market is hardly down right now. The sentiment is beginning to turn, but there hasn't been much of a correction.
Adele, we got to leave it there. But thank you very much. You're saying right now on any type of dip, you'd buy the Magnificent Seven, financials and energy. Always great to see you again. You did call that year-end rally. All right, for more on what's driving the markets and the trading day ahead, head over to CNBC Pro at cnbc.com/pro for exclusive insights and analysis. All right, you hear the music. We got a lot more ahead here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, Boeing defending itself against yet another whistleblower and concerns over its 787 Dreamliner jumbo jet, plus shares of Live Nation. They are sinking in the pre-market on new antitrust fears. And then later in the show, shares of Trump Media crashing back to earth in a spectacular way. The latest sell-off catalyst in your big money movers. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Pippa Stevens is at CNBC HQ with those. Pippa, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Frank. Well, House Speaker Mike Johnson plans to move ahead with four separate foreign aid bills. Johnson holding a conference with House Republicans last night to lay out the measures, one to fund Israel, another for Ukraine, a third for Taiwan, and a fourth that would wrap several proposals into one. Johnson is balancing threats from his party members against pressure to provide more support to Israel following Iran's attack this weekend. And shares of Live Nation are tumbling. The Wall Street Journal reports the Justice Department plans to file an antitrust suit against the company as soon as next month. The suit is expected to allege Live Nation, which also owns Ticketmaster, has used its dominance to undermine the competition. The company has been accused of unreasonably high ticket fees, bad customer service, and anti-competitive practices by lawmakers, regulators, and consumers. And Boeing is pushing back on a whistleblower's allegations over the safety of two of its planes, the 777 and 787 Dreamliner, warning panels on the outside of the 787 could eventually break apart mid-flight. During a media briefing yesterday, two Boeing engineering executives described how the panels are fitted together, suggesting the 787's carbon composite skin is nearly impervious to metal fatigue found on a conventional aluminum body. The whistleblower, a former Boeing engineer, is set to testify at a Senate subcommittee hearing tomorrow. Those shares now around flat. Frank?
All right, Pippa, thank you very much. Time now for your big money movers, and our Christina Partsenevelis also has those back at HQ.
We're sticking with HQ here, Frank. Well, good morning. Tesla lower again after closing in the red yesterday. The EV maker is laying off roughly 10% of its workforce as it prepares for its next phase of growth. So in a memo to employees, CEO Elon Musk says the cuts are a way to reduce costs and increase productivity. Shares of Trump Media also looking to extend yesterday's slide. The company plans to allow existing investors to use stock warrants to register millions of shares, but it wouldn't actually change the number of outstanding shares nor the lockup period preventing shareholders like Trump from selling until September. There's a lot of retail traders who own this stock. They may have assumed the number of outstanding shares actually increased, hence all the selling that we're seeing. The move, though, also comes as Donald Trump's criminal trial on hush money charges kicks off in New York. And watching cybersecurity stocks today, BlackBerry coming off its worst day since January. Tenable, Sentinel One, and Rapid7 are also among the sector's biggest losers, along with Okta, Cloudflare, and Zscaler. The companies you used to cover, Frank, quite often, right?
Yeah. You know, Christina, I still do. It's great to see you, though. Great to have you on Worldwide Exchange.
Likewise.
All right, coming up here on the show, Microsoft ups the ante with a new billion-dollar AI investment, this time with a focus on international efforts. The full story and all your AI headlines, they're coming up after this.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We're now turning to that growing push by companies to tap into the boom around artificial intelligence. Microsoft announcing this morning will invest $1.5 billion in United Arab Emirates' top artificial intelligence firm, G42. Meanwhile, the chief of Google's AI business says the company's plans to spend more than $100 billion over time developing AI tech. That revelation by Google's DeepMind CEO coming at a conference yesterday when asked about a reported $100 billion supercomputer being planned by Microsoft and OpenAI. And China's Baidu revealing that its AI chatbot, ErnieBot, has gathered more than 200 million users. So that figure roughly doubling from the company's last update back in December. For more on the growing investments around AI, let's bring in Jeff Wong, Global Chief Innovation Officer at EY, which has done a number of recent surveys on the matter. Jeff, good morning. Great to have you here in London.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
All right, so we're just kind of spelling out, I'm going to lean back a little bit. We're just kind of spelling out what all these different companies are doing around AI. Give us a sense. How is AI going to impact us in our workplace? What's it going to really mean for our day-to-day jobs? You put out a recent survey saying 61% of companies say they're just uncertain around Gen AI. They don't know what to do with it.
So what I'm seeing actually out there is everybody's excited about AI and Gen AI specifically, and they're going to be investing heavily into the space. So if you look at the industry even today, one of our surveys, 99% of them said, hey, we're going to invest in AI. 70% said we're actually going to accelerate our investment right in AI. And if you look at the banking industry alone, the top banks, 60% of them have already started accelerating their investment. That's why you're seeing these large investments by these technology companies.
You know, this is fascinating. So right here, pretty much every financial services company is investing in AI, but you had a report, financial services has the lowest level of skepticism. They're like, hey, we'll adopt, we'll take a look at it. But at the same time, your report says, and just like kind of figure this out for me, blind optimism and hype around the tech can ultimately be counterproductive. So the more enthusiastic you are, the worst chance you have of succeeding with it doesn't seem to make sense. It seems like it's counterintuitive.
No, what happens is we live through a hype cycle with every new technology. So early on, we look at the promise of what this technology can be, and we get excited about the imagination. I love new technology. I get excited about the imagination of what's possible. And then you start piloting, and then you start figuring out what works and doesn't work. Right. And then you sort of drop off on your excitement.
It sounds like you're talking about the metaverse right now.
Yeah, as reality starts to hit you, you start to understand what it can and can't do. We're going through that right now. So we're in the pilot phase. All these industries and companies, they're piloting these Gen AI efforts. So they're really excited about the potential and the possibilities. I think sometime soon we're going to start to see over the next few quarters, people starting to understand the reality of where the technology is. There still needs to be development around privacy, security, scalability, cost associated with this, the tool set around it. But we're going to see that development and you'll see the long-term benefits, I think, from Gen AI.
You seem really excited about it. So give me a sense, how's EY using AI? And also just tell me about the human component to all this. Because like, look, I got an iPhone right here. This thing does all types of things, but I really just call people and text on it. I don't do much else.
You know, we're really excited about AI. So we actually started our AI journey 8-9 years ago. So it's been a long time, a long journey for us. In Gen AI specifically, we have a platform that we released internally called EYQ. Mm-hmm. It basically gives our employees enterprise access to a ChatGPT-like functionality. You know that 75% of our employees go to it every single month, so it's 300,000 people every single month.
That's a high level of adoption, right?
A very high level adoption in a very short time frame. And a lot of them are doing it much more than once a month. That's just sort of the metric we're quoting today. And so we're really excited about this. We're doing it to do things like summarize a series of internal documents so people can read things faster, process it faster.
Jeff Wong, I can feel the excitement.
Running processes
I can feel the
faster.
Excitement coming from you. We got some Pittsburgh connections. It's good to meet you and hope to talk to you again.
Great. Thank you, Frank.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. As we head to break, we have a market alert on shares of Doc Martens, maker of the popular, that's me talking, not Jeff, maker of the popular steel-toe boots. They're sinking in London trading, the company naming a new CEO and cutting its outlook for fiscal 2025. It warns in a worst case scenario, revenue could drop to just a third of what it made last year. Again, shares of Doc Martin, the bootmaker, down just about almost 30%. You see the sharp drop off on that chart. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I am Frank Holland coming to you from CNBC London. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. Stocks coming off another tough session. The S&P and the NASDAQ closing down more than 1%, and the Dow extending its losing streak to six straight sessions. Take a look this morning. I mean, kind of a mixed picture. The NASDAQ was in the red, right now just fractionally higher. The Dow off of its lows. The S&P lower, but essentially flat. All right, Monday's loss is only adding to what's been a kind of a tough start to the month in the second quarter. The S&P and the NASDAQ down more than 3%. The Dow down more than 5%. We're also looking at the stocks leading the Dow lower so far this month. We're talking names like Intel, down 18%, Boeing, down 13%, Home Depot, down 12%, and United Health, which reports its results in just a bit, down double digits as well, or almost double digits, pretty much. We're also checking the bond market this morning as Treasury yields, they continue to hover at their highest level in just about 6 months. Taking a look at the benchmark at 4.64. We continue to watch the moves in the bond market and their impact on the overall markets. And we're also looking at energy, oil holding right around 90 bucks a barrel when we're talking about Brent crude, the international benchmark. Taking a look right now, just falling a few cents below that $90 measure, down a quarter of a percent. WTI falling just a bit harder, down about a third of a percent, trading basically at $85 a barrel and 10 cents. We're also looking at other commodities, including gold, once again at an all-time high. It continues to move higher. Look at that chart. Gold up 15% year-to-date. Right now trading at about $23.85 an ounce, up fractionally right now. We're also looking at cocoa. Yeah, cocoa this morning, testing a fresh all-time high of 10,000, and right now at 10,600, but still trading very close to an all-time high. Cocoa up just about a half a percent. But look at that year-to-date chart. Just this year, cocoa up more than 150%. All right, that's your morning setup. We want to turn our attention back to stocks and to Wall Street, bracing for what could be a third straight down session in a row. Ahead of the open, the major averages all between 3 and 5% off of their all-time record highs. This is Wall Street's fear gauge. That's the VIX. It pops to its highest level since October on fears of persistent inflation following yesterday's hotter-than-expected retail sales report and renewed Mideast tensions. To help us dig through the noise and offer some perspective on what you should be doing now is Lavelle Investment CEO Andrew Grinstead, number four on CNBC's latest FA 100 list, celebrating 45 years in business with $2.4 billion in assets under management. Good morning. It's great to have you. Good to talk to you from London. I'm going to jump right into things. A lot going on in the world right now, specifically Israel and Iran. As you talk to your clients about their portfolios, how big of a factor is that?
You know, I don't think it's too big of a factor yet. I think folks obviously are paying attention to the news and whatnot, but and that's why they have an advisor. We sort of sit in there and absorb some of that volatility for them. So honestly, I don't think we've had a lot of inbound client calls. We just continue to meet with clients as regular. So.
Okay, so not too much about that, at least not yet. I want to go to some of your research right now. You're saying the S&P has a one-year return of 25%. That's total, including dividends and other things. Q1 return 11%, also including dividends. But you say your clients, they're actually, even with all these great returns, they're asking you, they're talking to you, I should say, about the U.S. debt level, which in all fairness, debt is escalating. Why is that such a concern for your clients right now?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. One is, you know, obviously with the election coming up, they know there could be some volatility because of that. And then I think second, you know, if you just look at the U.S. deficit situation, we've been running about, you know, a little north of 6% deficits with really low unemployment. And that's pretty unprecedented. If you look back to the chart for like the last, you know, since 1970, we're really running a pro-cyclical deficit program right now. And that's problematic. And so I think clients rightly sense that out, that there's something wrong with running 6% deficits with unemployment as low as it is. And so they're asking the question, you know, okay, where would we be with inflation or, you know, the U.S. consumer if deficits were more typical, you know, at this range of unemployment, which would be sort of, you know, 1% deficits. Okay. So I think that's problematic.
Yeah, you know, it's not an irrational fear. We were just showing the audience a chart where the U.S. deficit is accelerating. A great CNBC article recently saying it's increasing by $1 trillion every 100 days. Yep. I want to shift to something else. You say your clients are talking to you about the bifurcated economy, basically the K-shaped situation when it comes to consumers, well-off consumers doing well, but, you know, middle-income, lower-income consumers not doing as well. And you're really focused on inflation and the impact on them. Why is that a big factor for a portfolio right now?
Well, you know, ultimately, I think consumers drive the U.S. economy. And so we're always out there looking for cracks in that. And we're starting to see cracks with the, you know, lower half of the U.S. consumer. If you look at delinquency rates in multifamily, for example, or if you look at delinquency rates in, you know, credit card loans and stuff like that, that's a problem. And these folks have, you know, there's still real inflation in auto insurance. There's still real inflation in things that they need, you know. So and now with the Middle East situation, as we talked about, if gas continues to go higher, you know, that's really going to help that lower half of the U.S. consumer. And they drive the economy just as much as the upper half. And so I think the upper half is enjoying asset price inflation. And so they still have the wealth effect and feel like everything's fine. But we see cracks in the lower half of the U.S. consumer.
You know, we had a number of guests saying that they expect to see some type of correction coming up and they view it as a buying opportunity. I had another guest just earlier today. When you're talking to your clients, if there is a correction, well, actually, I should ask you, are you anticipating a correction? Are you telling people to take money off the table? Are you telling people a correction is a buying opportunity? How do you see the possibility of that?
Sure. No, I mean, as I think a lot of advisors, we're sort of long-term investors. We expect there to be market volatility. We expect there to be corrections on a regular basis. We haven't had one in a while, but I think for most of our clients, they have the right asset allocation for a longer-term you know, view. Now, I will say what we have been doing is telling people not to get overly enthusiastic about equities. You mentioned those returns, 25% over the last 12 months. Or north of that, north of 11% last quarter, that draws people into equity markets. And, you know, we're really cautious about folks doing that. And right now, fixed income markets are attractive. And so, you know, we don't want people to desert their asset allocation just because.
Got it.
You know,
Andrew, we got to go. But when you're talking about bonds very quickly, short term, long term, what are you suggesting?
We're starting to extend duration. You know, you're getting 4.65 in the 10-year. And, you know, you're getting 2% real yield there. Those are great numbers if you look historically. And so we're starting to move in that direction.
Andrew, we got to leave the conversation there. Andrew Grinstead, number 4 on our FA 100 list. Great to see you. Thanks for being here on the show.
Thanks, Frank.
All right, turning back to geopolitics, as we mentioned, Mideast tensions. They're once again on the front burner for investors today. U.S. officials, they tell NBC News they expect any potential response by Israel over Iran's attack over the weekend to be limited in scope, most likely involving strikes against Iranian military forces and Iranian-backed proxies outside of the country. The conflict, not just creating fresh risk for the region. Contessa Brewer joins us now with a look at its impact on global insurers. Contessa, good morning. It's good to see you as always.
Good morning, Frank. Yeah, you know, the markets are doing this quick calculus on how the standoff between Israel and Iran plays out. But insurers began taking action months ago. In January, global carriers started writing in cancellation clauses for war or clarifying their exclusions around it. And that's because there's an estimated $10 billion in exposure at stake in and around Israel for political risk and terrorism policies alone. Marine insurance has soared, affecting shipping costs, and charges are 10 to 15 times higher for those who opt to ship through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. Aviation insurance, same. International and local customers have seen prices soar for property and for infrastructure insurance. And then remember, the war exclusions are still present. Everest Global has a major reinsurance business, but it's also an international primary insurer. CEO Juan Andrade told me he's now weighing out the risks for both assets and liabilities. He said on the liability side, this includes potential direct risk exposure for the number of customers in the region. And then on the asset side, our investment portfolios are conservative. They're made up primarily of bonds, which can be impacted by economic shifts and changes in interest rates and, of course, changes in foreign exchange. It's really the reinsurers like Swiss Re, Munich Re, Hanover Re that are bracing for impact, perhaps even more than the primary carriers, which, of course, have limits on their own exposure. The OAC Insurance Risk Monitor warns that an escalation in tensions in the Middle East will affect business plans and capital model assumptions, the premium rating, underwriting decisions, and risk management, Frank.
So, Contessa, when you're talking to these different insurance companies, do they see any warnings from the broader economy?
Well, yeah, because already, as I said, if you've got shipping insurance skyrocketing, what that means is you're taking longer for most of the shipping to go around the Horn of Africa. That affects supply chains. It affects costs. If you look at the issue of trade credits and this this pressure that gets put on cross-border trade, what the OAC says is we're likely to see this spark renewed inflation just at a time when countries around the world are trying to get their inflation lower. So they're ringing the warning bell about supply chains and trade and, again, about inflation.
All right, Contessa Brewer, thank you very much. Great to see you, as always. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we're digging through a mixed picture for the market's second largest sector, the key metric our next guest is watching, with Bank of America and Morgan Stanley reporting results just about an hour from now. And as we go to break, in its traditional ceremony, the Olympic torch has just been lit, and it's on its way to Paris, not too far here from London. You're looking at a live shot from the Olympia in Greece. There are 101 days to go until the Olympic Games begin in Paris, right here on NBC, and we are back. In just a moment, again, the Olympic torch just lit, beginning its journey to Paris. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your global briefing in Asia, closing sharply lower, despite China's economy pulling out a surprise with first quarter GDP figures. Eunice Yun joins us now from Beijing with much more. Eunice.
Thanks so much, Frank. Yeah, China's Q1 GDP surprised to the upside, coming in at 5.3% versus the expected 4.6%. This is thanks to Beijing's effort to supercharge its manufacturing sector and its sales overseas. However, the March data raised doubts about the outlook. The retail sales and industrial production both missed. New home sales fell at their fastest clip since 2015. The property sector, of course, very, very important to this economy, saw its investment drop 17% year on year, sales 24% year on year. A fixed asset investment for the quarter came in stronger than expected. A lot of that money going into the manufacturing sector and and the promotion of China's tech exports. And this is much of this dismay, Frank, of China's trading partners, including the U.S. as well as Europe. In fact, Germany's chancellor has been in China and has criticized what he called China's overproduction.
Yeah, a lot of overproduction concerns over there in China. You're there on the ground, Eunice. Any word about maybe possibly fresh stimulus measures, or does this strong GDP report, does it possibly, or is there a perception that it would make Chinese officials think they're not necessary?
Well, there are folks who are watching an April Politburo meeting. So this is the leadership meeting for the month. But there isn't a whole lot of expectation that there's going to be a whole-scale change. I think a lot of that is also because of some of the comments that we had out of President Xi Jinping, who was very dismissive of the criticism of the excess capacity. He actually has been arguing that China's mass production of EVs, lithium batteries, as well as solar panels, helps global inflation as well as climate issues. China, though, has long been accused of flooding global markets by using anti-competitive state subsidies. However, it looks as though that won't necessarily change. We're seeing even in state media that Chinese officials have been describing charges of excess capacity by the U.S. and Europe as fake news, which is an indicator that authorities here are feeling quite sensitive about this issue.
Our Eunice Yun, live in Beijing. Eunice, great to see you as well. All right, turn our attention back to the U.S. Bank of America and Morgan Stanley, they're set to cap off first quarter big bank results this morning. While analysts expect growth in both earnings and revenue, those beats could still fail to prop the stocks up. Shares of J.P. Morgan, Citi, Wells Fargo, and Goldman Sachs all down in the last week despite beats across the board. Joining me now with his expectations is Stephen Bigger, Director of Financial Institutions Research at Argus Research. Stephen, good morning. Great to have you here. I want to touch on something that we haven't talked a lot about on CNBC, but deposits and deposit risk. J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo both saying that they had lower deposits. Coming up, we have Bank of America, a big consumer bank. What are your expectations when it comes to deposits?
Yeah, good morning, Frank. So, deposits have been a worry spot for banks over the last four quarters since the March failure last year of banks. And look, that's going to continue to be an issue, not just some deposit runoff, but higher deposit costs for deposits that stay. So it's produced some pressure on the net interest margin, certainly. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, typically as a bank analyst, you hope for higher rates. Banks are asset sensitive and tend to benefit from higher rates. But at this point, higher interest rates have, I think, worn out their welcome and are really starting to crimp loan growth as well. Kind of double-edged sword right there.
Yeah. I think they've worn out their welcome with the consumers as well. Important to note, Morgan Stanley and Bank of America both trading negatively or trading lower right now. One other thing we've been talking about and really wringing our hands about is commercial real estate. We had the CEO of JLL on our air just a few weeks ago saying that the commercial real estate market is bottom. What are you expecting when it comes to commercial real estate and also loan loss provisioning?
So commercial real estate loans have gotten a lot of headlines, obviously, but honestly, they've not really turned problematic, according to the banks. They're setting aside a bit more in terms of loss provisioning there. They're tightening underwriting standards. Of course, when these come due for renewal, you know, you've got less cash flow from the properties, the higher vacancies and so forth. So it's a slow train wreck, not kind of a high speed crash, we would say. Broadly speaking, loan loss provisions are very robust right now. They've actually come down mostly in the first quarter. So I think that's saying banks are saying that they're pretty pleased with where credit quality stands right now.
All right. You have a buy on Goldman, Morgan Stanley and Bank of America, three of the banks we're talking about. But do you have one that's a top pick in this space right now for investors going forward?
Well, J.P. Morgan tends to be the standout, of course. It's a standout on loan growth, on, just the market share appreciation that they get in across most areas of investment banking. Very well reserved, great management team. And even without the First Republic addition last May, they showed a greater loan growth than most other banks. So it tends to get the kudos, I think, from most analysts. Morgan Stanley, of course, has a great business model. Wealth management doing great. Asset values up 20% over the past year. And I think investment banking looks like it's about to embark on a bit more durable activity after some false starts in 2023. So we look for better activity there as the year goes by.
All right, Stephen Biggar Vargas, great to see you. Thank you very much. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, while recent market turbulence isn't shaking your next guest's confidence and the road ahead for stocks. We are back right after this break. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start with Microsoft investing $1.5 billion in Abu Dhabi AI group G42, giving it a minority stake in G42 and President Brad Smith a seat on that board. In Washington, House Speaker Mike Johnson plans to bring four separate funding bills for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan to the floor as a way to break his party's month-long deadlock over a $95 billion foreign aid package. The Department of Justice reportedly set to sue Live Nation as soon as next month. The Wall Street Journal says the DOJ is alleging anti-competitive practices in the live event space. Taking a look at shares, they're down more than 6.5%. Boeing defending the quality and safety of its 787 Dreamliner after a whistleblower claimed the company took shortcuts to speed up production. That whistleblower expected to make his case before the Senate tomorrow. Shares of Boeing actually fractionally higher. International Paper is buying its UK rival DS Smith for about $7 billion in stock, edging out a rival bid from Mondi. DS Smith had previously reached an agreement to merge with Mondi when it began talks with International Paper. Taking a look at DS Smith, those shares actually down right now. And a California judge dismissing several lawsuits against Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg that claimed he hid Facebook and Instagram's harmful effects to children from the public. All right, here's what to watch today. We have March housing starts and building permits. They're out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern. We also get earnings from Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, PNC, Johnson & Johnson, United Health, and United Airlines. And Fed Chair Jay Powell set to give some fresh comments this afternoon. Before that, don't miss Sarah Eisen's exclusive interview with ECB President Christine Lagarde on the sidelines of the World Bank and IMF spring meetings at 9 a.m. Eastern time. All right, let's look at the trading day ahead now. Let's bring in David Kass, Chief Investment Officer at Matrix Assets Advisors. David, good morning from London. I'm going to jump into it. Looking at futures that are lower right now, what's your WEX word of the day? How do you see today shaping up?
Unsettled. There are a number of uncertainties right now that the market's dealing with, whether it's Israel and Iran, the rise in interest rates, or earnings season. All has caused the market to be a little bit uncomfortable, and you've got that downside bias over the short term.
What are you expecting from Jay Powell coming up later today? He speaks in the afternoon. A lot of anticipation about what he's going to say about the rate cut path going forward. It seems like the market sold off on that higher than expected retail number, which gave investors at least a feeling that those rate cuts were pushed even further out.
We don't think he's going to say anything that significantly new. We think he's going to talk about the Fed ultimately lowering rates, but they're not in a hurry and they're looking at data as it comes in. Right now, we think it gets pushed out a little bit, but we do think ultimately the Fed is going to be lowering rates this year. That, coupled with a good economy, leaves us pretty upbeat about stocks for the year, but we do expect a lot of volatility along the way.
All right, so you're upbeat about stocks. We also have some industrial numbers coming out. I'm not saying it's a big report or anything, but it seems like every report seems to move the markets. If we see a hotter than expected read on industrial production, how do you see that impacting the day ahead?
Again, for the very short term, the market has become hyper-focused on anything. We think the economic data is good. That could spook the market again. But again, that's a shorter-term phenomenon. We think the key to long-term success for investors is turn the noise down in terms of all of the current economic data and try to focus on 6 to 12 months. And on that basis, we do think that you want to be buying a dip.
All right, so you're not chasing rallies. You're preparing to buy a dip. You also gave us some picks today. Amgen's one of your picks. Just curious, why Amgen?
Well, Amgen is a very good long-term biotech company. The stock sells with about a 3.5% yield at about 13, 14 times earnings. And they also have a play on the weight loss drugs, but you're not paying for it. If you contrast that to a Lilly, it's at 60 times earnings. Amgen, much, much cheaper. And if they're even modestly successful on weight loss, you do well.
David, I got to cut you off. Your pick's right there on the screen. We're going to toss things over to Bertha Coombs with an earnings alert on United Health.
Hey, Frank, United Health revenues beat expectations at $99.8 billion versus a $99.3 billion estimate, led by the Optum Services division. despite the February cyber attack on the Change Healthcare unit. Now, it's much more complicated on the bottom line because it's unclear whether adjusted earnings of $6.91 per share is comparable to the analyst consensus, because that adjusted number includes 25-cent per share impact for part of the business disruption costs from the Change hack, but it excludes costs for advance payments and interest-free loans made to providers due to the system outage, which the company now says tops $6 billion. United is reaffirming its adjusted full-year outlook, despite an expected 30 to 40 cent per share impact from Change disruption costs. Those are the headlines. Lots to go through here.
All right, United Health right now up over 1%. Futures right now, they are in the red. Thank you to our Bertha Coombs. That's going to do it for us. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.